Thank you, Mr. Chairman and council members. As you know, behind tab five, I've doubled it, so I'm going to try and go twice as fast. You have information on the Heron Committee's work. We have two basic council action items. One, we wanted to have NOAA General Counsel and the Northeast Regional Office provide an overview of the lawsuit, as well as to review the letter that was sent to the council. There were some things that were brought forward in that they were asking the council and the committee to consider certain things in the specifications, as well as trying to move forward quickly and in a timely manner with our Amendment 5. We also have some initial actions with the fishery specification process and a few motions that we'd like to bring to the full council for their consideration as we begin to develop the specifications. We also will have a recommendation for priorities from the committee that I'll also want to make the council aware of. So with that being said, I'd like to turn it over to Gene Martin, who will give us an overview of the lawsuit, and then I guess he'll turn it over to the regional office for an overview of the letter.
All right, thanks, Doug. Actually, I'm going to pass the buck even further. I introduced some of the issues regarding the lawsuit and the remedial order in my report on yesterday. I'm going to let Mitch summarize from the legal context the court's opinion and its subsequent remedial order that was issued to NIMP, to National Marine Fisheries Service. It doesn't actually obligate the council. It obligates us to recommend things to the council. Mitch McDonald, to my right, is a colleague in my office of NOAA General Counsel in Gloucester. I'm finally getting some help with council issues, and he was directly involved with the remedial order and the litigation. I was not, so he's better suited to giving this overview. And then after he's done, we'll turn the time over to Carrie Nordine, as you said, to give an overview of the letter that we sent to the council with respect to the remedial order. Mitch?
Thank you, Gene. Just as a recap, Gene outlined yesterday the initial decision by the court in the matter of Flaherty v. Bryson, or now Blank. And in that order, Judge Kessler found that the agency had not sufficiently considered whether the council's decision about stocks in the fishery complied with the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Also said that the agency failed to consider whether the fishery management plan minimized bycatch to the extent practicable. And then also, that was in terms of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And then concerning NEPA, said that the agency had not considered a range of alternatives for the ABC control rule, minimizing bycatch to the extent practicable, and then also concerning accountability measures. Subsequent to the order, the plaintiffs and the agency attempted to settle and were unable to, and then Judge Kessler issued a remedial order. And she ordered the agency to do a number of things. The first thing that she ordered is to remand Amendment 4 back to the agency for reconsideration of the issues that were not sufficiently considered. She vacated Amendment 4 for a one-year period pending the agency's compliance measures. And it's still it's still unclear what may happen at the end of that one-year period. But she has retained jurisdiction over this matter and will be monitoring it and making further determinations. She also ordered that the agency send a letter of recommendation to the council concerning recommending that the council consider whether river herring should be named as a stock in the fishery, and then outlined information that she wants the council to consider when making that determination. The order specifically refers to the 2012 ASMFC River Herring Stock Assessment Report and Peer Review Report, the National Marine Fisheries Service's 2011 finding that listing river herring as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act may be warranted, and the 2007 Shad Stock Assessment Report and its Peer Review Report. And alternative set 9 in the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council's Amendment 14, draft environmental impact statement, and then finally a copy of her opinion. In addition to that, she ordered that within 1 year's time from her order was issued, the remedial order was issued on August 2nd, that the agency file with the court a supplemental explanation setting forth its consideration of whether the Atlantic herring fishery management plan minimizes bycatch to the extent practicable, and then further ordered to consider a reasonable range of alternatives for minimizing bycatch to the extent practicable, reasonable alternatives to the current accountability measures for the fishery, including monitoring alternatives, and last, to the interim ABC control rule for the Atlantic herring fishery, at least one of which shall be based on the most recent best available science for setting ABC control rules for herring and other forage fish. And then, in addition, the agency is responsible for updating the court at the six-month mark. The agency has responded to the first part of the remedial order in its letter of recommendation to the council, and I want to turn that over now to Carrie to review that letter.
So as Mitch described, the court basically found three general procedural deficiencies. In regarding the first deficiency was the stock in the fishery definition. And as Mitch described, we were required to submit a description to the court about our consideration of that definition and a letter to the council requesting that the council consider in an amendment designating river herring and shad as stocks in the fishery. That letter is in your meeting packet, and it has a date of August 31st. At its June meeting, the Mid-Atlantic Council adopted a motion to consider designating river herring and shad as stocks in the fishery for Amendment 15 to the mackerel squid butterfish FMP. In our August 31st letter, we encouraged this council to collaborate with the Mid-Atlantic Council as well as the ASMFC in its consideration of the need for federal conservation management for river herring and shad. River herring and shad have unique management challenges, and your consideration of federal management for river herring and shad is an opportunity to engage management partners and stakeholders in a holistic management of these species. So that was the first deficiency. The second deficiency found by the court was compliance with National Standard 9. And to that, as Mitch explained, we were required to send a letter to the council recommending that it consider a range of alternatives to minimize bycatch. And we're also required to submit an explanation to the court describing how the herring FMP minimizes bycatch to the extent practicable. So again, the letter is your August 31st letter in your packet. And in that letter, we talk about Amendment 5 to the herring FMP. And that amendment currently contains a range of alternatives to minimize bycatch. Therefore, it's our recommendation that Amendment 5 should explain why the range of alternatives considered is reasonable and how measures adopted by the council as part of Amendment 5 minimize bycatch to the extent practicable in the herring FMP. And then to the third finding in the court, I'll spend a little more time on that because that's sort of the issue before you today. And that relates to consideration of the ABC control rule in AMs. So what the court found is that the EA for Amendment 4 did not adequately consider a range of alternatives for ABC control rule or AMs, and NIMS was ordered to send a letter to the council asking the council that it consider an adequate range of alternatives for those two issues. And specifically, the EA for Amendment 4, it compared the proposed action to the no action. And if you'll recall, Amendment 4 brought the herring FMP into compliance with ACL and AM requirements. So in that case, the no action alternative was in violation of MSA requirements. And the court concluded, because of that, that that was not a reasonable range of alternatives. So in the court explained further that the council did consider alternatives for ABC control rule, such as the 1 year, the 3 year, and the 5 year average of recent catch. And the council has also considered alternatives for the AMs, such as a lower threshold to close the directed fishery in a management area, but those alternatives were not analyzed in the EA for Amendment 4. So moving forward, in order to comply with the court order, the NEPA document for the specifications needs to analyze a range of alternatives for the ABC control rule and the current AMs. In the final rule for Amendment 4, we stated that a new ABC control rule, if it could be developed following the 2012 stock assessment, it would be done in the 2013-15 specifications. The process to comply with the court order regarding ABC control rule is progressing. As you're all aware, the SSC considered different approaches for the ABC control rule and made its recommendation to you. Moving forward, we need to ensure that the range of alternatives is analyzed in the NEPA document for the specifications. There are currently three AMs in the herring fishery: a management area closure, an ACL overage deduction, and the haddock catch cap. Now, the haddock catch cap deals primarily with managing haddock catch. So because it doesn't concern herring, the specifications don't need to analyze a range of alternatives for that AM. But it does need to analyze a range of alternatives for the other two AMs. For example, it could consider adjusting the management area closure threshold from 95%, either higher or lower. It could modify the area management closure measure to prohibit the retention of herring after 100% of the catch of a sub-ACL is achieved. Or it could adjust the magnitude of an overage deduction. A range of alternatives for ABC control rule and AMs has been considered by the council in the past, as the court recognized. But to comply with the court order again, we just need to ensure that that type of consideration is included in the NEPA analysis. Now, regarding the timeline for the ABC control rule and the AM analysis, the court ordered a completed NEPA analysis by August 2013. So in general, a NEPA analysis is completed just prior to the final rule. If the NEPA analysis is an EA, the council could take final action in November or as late as January, and we should have a completed EA by August. If the NEPA analysis is an EIS and the council takes final action in January, the timing is a little trickier, but we would just need to move forward and complete it as soon as possible. Just in general, we in the regional office feel that the court's decision is a positive one. It allows us to address the procedural deficiencies that the court found in ongoing herring actions without having to redo Amendment 4, and it recognizes the importance of the council process to address these deficiencies. Be happy to answer any questions.
Mary Beth.
We had a committee meeting and had a discussion of this, and I thought that Carrie explained it very well. But when I read through the letter, one question did come up. This reference to considering a range of AMs in the specification package, and then in the letter it says, the last sentence of that paragraph, if during the specification process a new herring AM is identified, implementation of that new AM would be considered in a future framework or amendment. So is our task then to only analyze in the specification package? and then implement, I mean, that's what it says, so I'm just seeking clarification on that.
So the court order specifically said to analyze a range of alternatives for current AMs, and our current regulations give us the authority to modify existing AMs through our specifications process, but we don't have the authority to create a new AM, something that we hadn't considered before. So in this process, we need to analyze a range for the current AMs, the ones I ran through. If through that consideration, a new AM that we haven't thought about comes up, I think we would just note that and implement that through a future action, a framework, or an amendment. But we don't have the mechanism to do it through the specifications, and the court isn't ordering us to come up with a whole new AM.
I think, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, I think the committee may have been a little confused last week. I think we were thinking that we needed to come up with additional AMs, and they need to be analyzed in the specification package. And as you know, I made a motion to that effect. We've talked a little further about maybe even expanding on that, but it sounds like we don't really need to do that at this point.
I think the motions that were made at the committee meeting are consistent with the court order and what we were anticipating looking at in the specifications package. Additionally, I think your motions just spoke to the management area closure threshold. I think we'd also want to consider adjustments to the overage deduction. So I think the motions are consistent with the court order.
You said the court order said we need to analyze our current AMs, and it's just unclear to me why we would be adding additional AMs to a specification package that can't implement them and would have to go into future action. I'm still not quite sure.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple questions. First one, did NIMS send a letter to the Mid-Atlantic asking them to consider river herring and shad as part of their mackerel fishery? That's the first question. Or did the court?
We did not send a letter to the Mid-Atlantic. The lawsuit specifically dealt with the herring FMP, not the mackerel squid.
Okay. So then I assume the Mid-Atlantic acted on their own initiative, not as a result of a lawsuit. So my question then is, when you look at, there's no way that both the Mid-Atlantic and our council could include river herring and shad as part of the mackerel fishery in one council and herring fishery in the other. Wouldn't you have to, at some point, if both councils decided to include it in the fishery, you'd have to designate one council as the management authority?
You're right. Two councils wouldn't be the primary lead, but only one would be. But I think we were thinking, as part of this conversation, both councils working together with ASMFC, by collaborating, you get a better idea of what management is necessary, is needed, what it should look like. And through that process, hopefully it will become obvious if federal management is necessary, who, you know, which council might be the better council to be the primary management, and which FMP should it reside in, or should it be its own FMP? That's another question.
And would there also be an option that it's managed now by the ASMFC, so no federal management? Is that an option, a third option?
that certainly would be a third option. I think going into it, everyone needs to consider what is the existing management, and is there, given the level of information, the scale of information, what we know, is there a need for federal, for conservation management in federal waters? The answer to that question may be no, but there needs to be an explicit consideration of that. And if the answer is yes, then you'd move forward. What would federal management look like? Its own FMP, stock in the fishery, those types of things.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kerry, you said that the court order mandated a range of alternatives for minimizing river herring bycatch, and that one pathway to deal with that would be to simply better explain what was in Amendment 5 in terms of river herring bycatch minimization. If I recall the Amendment 5 where we ended up, we have improved monitoring, possibly improved reporting of any bycatch, but the only minimization action that we took was to commit to setting a river herring cap in the future, if I recall. Is that different from your recollection, and what are we going to explain with regards to that mandate?
Well, the court order is to minimize bycatch. It doesn't specify river herring bycatch. So as with any amendment, when it's put together and then comes to the agency for review and approval, we review it in terms of National Standard 9. Does it minimize bycatch to the extent practicable? I think there are some measures, as you mentioned, in Amendment 5. There is a future river herring catch cap. There's also some slippage measures. There's also some proposed measures for bringing all the catch aboard in groundfish closed areas. So we would consider all of those things in total when it came to the agency for review and approval. And then also we have a one-year deadline to submit that report to the court about how the herring FMP in total minimizes bycatch. So that would be all part of it. So I think at this point, Amendment 5 is the best vehicle for that, and we would just need to consider, and the amendment should be explicit, how it does minimize bycatch.
I have Rick Robbins and Doug Rapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Paul Howard has raised an important question that we should all be thinking about, namely, if this is going to be managed through the council process, how should it be most effectively addressed? And obviously, you know, it's going to require a coordinated approach. But our council was considering this question actively in the development of Amendment 14. And as we came to the conclusion of that action, we were advised by General Counsel that if we were going to make a decision about whether or not to include river herrings as a stock in the fishery, that that would in fact need to be done through a separate following action. And to that end, we agreed at the time to initiate Amendment 15. We're going to begin scoping this fall, and I believe they just had an organizational webinar to get that started before scoping. But I think one of the key questions that will be addressed through that early stage of the process will be precisely what Paul has asked, namely, how should the council and councils move forward to address this question? You know, should there be a joint plan? If they're identified as a stock in the fishery, you've got significant overlap between some of these fisheries, namely between our squid, mackerel, and butterfish FMP and your Atlantic herring FMP. So there are a lot of questions like that I think we need to be anticipating. And as we go into the scoping part of the process, that'll be one of the key questions. And I would look forward to that certainly being a coordinated approach. I think our staff obviously will be in close contact with yours as we get into the early stages of that.
Doug. Yeah, thank you. Gary, just to clarify your response to Mary Beth concerning that one statement on the third page, the way I understood it, you said that we can modify our current ACLs in the specifications process accountability measures in the specifications process. For example, we could change the 95% closure to 90% or to 97% or something in the specifications process. But if we came up with something completely different, such as a closed area as a new specification, that would take a framework. That's where you bring in the work of implementing something new in a framework. Is that what you were talking about?
That's correct. Whatever the new measure would be, yes, we'd have to see if it was within the existing authority, and if not, it could be implemented through a future action. And again, the court's just ordering us to analyze a range of alternatives for the existing, the current AMs.
Doug, the items that you were talking about under Herring priorities, those primarily deal with how some of these issues will be addressed in.
Yes, we had a motion that clarified what we wanted to go into the specifications process. What we were going to address in the specifications process. And then there had been a draft of the priorities that had been developed and sent to us, and we made a modification to that.
My thinking was that since, we by going to those, we will revisit this discussion, that maybe we should move on. I don't know what your planned order was for items to come up, but it seems to me that we're going to get back to this discussion when you have those items for us to decide on.
That is certainly true. I'll tell you what my order was once we were through with questions here, I was just going to verbally make the full council aware of that motion and leave it at that, and then we were going to go to a presentation by Lori on the specifications process. And the only reason we were doing it that way was just to clarify for the council what we were going to go put in the specifications process.
I was trying to tactfully suggest that we actually do that at this point in time and then revisit the questions when we have to make those motions.
See, do you want me to read the motion?
Sure. I'm trying to keep us moving mm-hmm. along with that, knowing that we're going to come back and mm-hmm. people can ask questions on those on that motion.
Okay.
At the time that is presented as a motion, you're just giving it now for informational purposes.
Yes.
Okay. I see Terry and then Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to provide a little context to the discussion the committee had last week, is we jumped, as this council is, right into the priorities following Kerry's presentation and some advice that we received that the spec process should be standalone, and we prioritized it, and then we went on with the rest of the development of the of our recommendations following that. So,
Dave?
A couple questions here. I'm going to try to read this judgment, but I'm not a lawyer, and I don't understand some of these things. Is it a range of alternatives or a reasonable range of alternatives? Could somebody tell me which one it is?
It's a reasonable range of alternatives.
And how is that defined? Is there a number? Is it?
Well, it depends. It depends on the context. And the court, in the particular case at hand, when the ABC control rule was being considered previously, looked at status quo as one of the council was looking at status quo as one of the alternatives, and then another ABC control rule. And the court said, and because the old status quo ABC control rule did not comply with the Magnuson Act, the court said that was not a reasonable range of alternatives because you couldn't go back to an unlawful ABC That was unreasonable. That was not a reasonable range of alternatives. So it could have been that if you had a legal option and another option, that two alternatives were reasonable. So it depends on the on the context.
Okay. Even if the second alternative is considered by the council to be unreasonable, as long as it's not illegal, it's still reasonable.
Mm-hmm. You considered. The council would have considered You're saying the council would have considered alternatives and then decided, chosen between the two alternatives. And then that would be, that would be considered in the environmental impact statement or the environmental assessment. And then the court would look at that.
Okay. I think. And then this analysis, how detailed is this analysis? Is it by gear type? Is it by fishery? Is it, in other words, is it by permit category? How much analysis has to be done here to satisfy this? You have to analyze. What's the definition of analyze?
What analysis are you talking about?
Well, it says that... apparently, we failed to analyze sufficient NEPA alternatives, and I'm trying to figure out what it is that the council has to do to satisfy this requirement for analysis. You know, in other words, specifications are, to me, numbers, and they don't have to be analyzed down to the permit level. But the permits are affected by some of these AMs dramatically differently. You know, so if you close the fishery at 95% and have a 2,000-pound bycatch, that alternative affects the category, the larger vessels, the A and B boats, pretty dramatically. I mean, they can't fish on 2,000 pounds a day, but it allows the whiting fishery to continue. If you close the fishery at 100% and you say nobody can retain a herring after that, that affects pretty much every fishery in the North Atlantic, because every fishery in the North Atlantic catches a herring now and then. So that's my question, is how far do you have to carry this?
Now, and this order is not adding additional requirements that don't already exist in the law under NEPA or anywhere else. This is just saying you have to conduct look at these additional reasonable range of alternatives, but it's not adding an additional burden that already doesn't exist for all of the EAs and EISs that we do. All of those things are somewhat subjective. The kinds of things that you're describing, if they're important for a decision maker to know about and deciding, and for the council to know about and deciding which alternative to pick, then that's what should be analyzed. It's not, you know, the whole concept of NEPA is to provide sufficient enough information that decision makers can make a reasonable call as to what might be the best approach from an environmental perspective of what they're trying to do. There is no, you know, objective five-page requirement for analysis. We do this all the time with everything that we do, and it really isn't changing that construct just because we have an order that requires us to do it.
Okay, that's helpful. The last one is, to this extent practicable. Again, I'm not quite sure I understand what kind of justification has to be provided. I mean, we have a bunch of alternatives in Amendment 5 that, to me, are justifiable, that we've met that standard. And do we just have to say that in the analysis and then say why we think we've met it? Or it just, like, again, a little more information so I understand what we're trying to do here.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, practicable is suggest kind of cost-benefit type of analysis into what's reasonably possible, how much does it affect the fishing boats that are required to do it. It's a balancing of those kinds of concerns, and it just, there needs to be a direct analysis of what practicability means in the context of this fishery.
Paul Howard, then I'm going back to Doug.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a very quick question. Determining whether or not the river herring and shad should be a stock in the complex of either mackerel or herring, that's got to be an amendment. In other words, we're doing priorities tomorrow, and if we're going to start the NEPA process for an amendment, I'd like to know if we have to do that or if we can sit down with the Mid-Atlantic and sit down with ASMFC and determine if it's best to stay with ASMFC, consider it as National Standard 9 bycatch in the fishery for the mackerel and herring. If we could do that by a working group, I'd rather do that than start the NEPA process. So the question is, do we need to start an amendment to determine whether or not river herring and shad is a stock in the herring fishery?
Well, I guess I'd defer to legal guidance. My initial take would be, no, you don't have to start an amendment before you determine whether you want to undertake an amendment. You'd do some analysis or have some discussion, and maybe doing it along with the ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic would be an appropriate way to do it, because you have to have that conversation anyway, and then decide whether they should be stocks in the fishery, and if so, the best mechanism to do that. But I'll defer to Gene and Mitch to see if they think that that's compliant with the
remedy. Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, if you could have some sort of joint discussion of this with respect to what are the things you should look at in terms of determining whether this should be a stock in the fishery or not, and then decide whether there's the will to go forward. Now, as I understand it, the Mid-Atlantic has already done this. They've initiated an amendment to consider this. So, you know, that part of it from their perspective has already been done. And so there may be a need to discuss with them to what extent do they want to fold in the New England Council views and participation in that, or would they be requesting you to do it? But it's already been initiated in the Mid-Atlantic as an amendment to consider this, at least in the context of their fisheries.
Paul?
I just think this is very important, and I think that my advice to the council would be, if the Mid is establishing an amendment, we better do that too, because at some point, one of the councils is going to have to give a sub-ACL if you do manage it. And if we sit down together and say, let's leave it with, you know, let's look at all the science and the benefits and everything and say it's more appropriate to handle it as National Standard 9, that's fine. But if the Mid goes off and wants to manage river herring and shad, then I think we want to do it too, and then have the service decide based on who they think is more appropriate. But if we don't do anything and just let the Mid go forward, they could end up with federal management authority. So I think we ought to have a working group before they proceed with the amendment. We can't. That's what my recommendation would be, is that we have a working group to see where we go with it rather than start down the NEPA process.
And let me ask Paul whether you think that the working group is something that could be crafted at NRCC?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great idea.
Because that's coming up in a few weeks, so. Okay. Doug.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to suggest that the committee, that the council look at document number 6, which is a meeting summary, and also shortly Lori will be giving a presentation on the specifications document, and that's item number 7. And just for the council's information, the committee did make a motion to pass a motion to recommend to the council that the 2013 and 2015 herring specifications be a standalone action as a top priority, and that would include the ABC controlled alternative or consideration of alternatives for ABC control road as well as accountability measures consistent with the court order. So our priority would be, one, develop the specifications package, two, develop a framework adjustment to establish river herring catch caps, three, develop industry-funded monitoring program for Amendment 5, and four, an amendment to consider river herring and shad as stocks in the fishery. Okay, with that, I'd like to turn it over to Lori to give a presentation on an overview of where we're at with the development of the specifications package. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Everybody should have copies of the presentation slide, presentation slides in your binder. I'm going to just very, very briefly summarize a lot of what you've already heard this morning from the stock assessment and the SSC, and then move into the hearing committee's recommendations for the 2013 to 15 specifications. I'm going to go over some of this preliminary stuff as quickly as possible. As you're all aware, herring is managed as one and assessed as one stock complex. We recognize that there are individual stock components and inshore and offshore components that mix seasonally, and we address this through the distribution of the total ACL among the management areas. But for assessment purposes and for setting the overfishing limit and the acceptable biological catch, we do focus on the one-stock complex. So we do set one annual catch limit, as I mentioned, with sub-ACLs that are assigned to the four management areas. You're familiar with the four management areas, areas 1A and 1B being the Gulf of Maine, 2 being southern New England and the Mid-Atlantic, and area 3 being the offshore Georges Bank area. This table here just lists the current fishery specifications. These were the allocations and specifications that we made for 2010 through 2012. I'll just note that these are the original allocations that we made. There have been some adjustments during the years, during 2011, 2012, for overages, small overages in some of the areas, as well as a reallocation of some fish into Area 1A during 2011, I believe. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 2010 for the New Brunswick weir fishery. But these are the original numbers, and now we're looking at 2013 to 2015 allocations. As you heard this morning, we have a new benchmark stock assessment, SAW 54. And based on the new assessment, we have new reference points that we discussed already this morning. According to the assessment and the latest numbers for spawning stock biomass and fishing mortality, the stock is not overfished. It is, in fact, rebuilt and above its theoretical carrying capacity, and overfishing is not occurring. So in terms of setting specifications for the fishery for the upcoming three fishing years, the first place to start is with your overfishing limit. The overfishing limit is prescribed to be greater than or equal to the ABC, which is greater than or equal to the ACL. The overfishing limit in the herring plan is set usually based on FMSY as your fishing mortality threshold when the stock is not overfished or overfishing is not occurring. So for for both alternatives that the SSC brought forward this morning for acceptable biological catch, we have run projections that provide your overfishing limit for those ABC levels. And the overfishing limits are based on an FMSY fishing mortality rate. Once you have determined your OFL, you then set your acceptable biological catch based on a reduction from OFL as needed to address scientific uncertainty. The ABC is recommended by the Scientific and Statistical Committee. So for the SSC meeting, the Herring PDT provided a discussion document. You have a copy of that discussion document in your materials. And the PDT reviewed the assessment and described in the discussion document for the SSC three general areas or sources of scientific uncertainty. The first being the 2008 year class for Herring. The second being the assumptions about natural mortality that went into the assessment, and the third being the new biological reference points that were generated by the assessment, and then other general uncertainties that may be associated with the data or the models. So just running through these briefly, the 2008 year class, as we discussed earlier, is the largest on record. You can see it there in the graph, and it's the largest on record by a lot. In 2009, the year class was estimated to be 59.4 billion age one fish, which, just for comparative purposes, the average from 96 to 2011 was 15.8 billion. So this is an exceptionally large year class. As noted earlier, it is being picked up in, various surveys. We saw this year class move through some of the fixed gear catches in 2010 and 2011, and it is now recruiting into the fishery. The assessment ran, the assessments performed some sensitivity runs to see how stock status may change or how the size of this year class influences the outcome of the assessment. And the sensitivity runs indicated that that the stock status determinations are robust to the size of this year class, meaning that if you cut the year class in half, I believe they cut it in half and brought it down to the next highest year class observed, the stock status did not change and the probability of overfishing still remained at zero. The second source of uncertainty that was discussed, that we also talked about a lot today, were the assumptions of natural mortality and the changes that were made in the assessment to account for herring as a forage species and the consumption of herring by predators. The new assessment uses an age and time varying natural mortality rather than just a straight assumption about natural mortality, and it varies by year and across time with a 50% increase in natural mortality starting in 1996. So 96 to 2011, natural mortality was bumped up by 50% and also applied by age. This helped to address the retrospective pattern, which was the primary source of uncertainty in previous assessments and a large problem when it came to previous assessments. And it also helped to ensure that the implied levels of consumption that were going into the assessment are consistent with the other data indicating what consumption of herring may be. The assessment reviewed stomach content analysis and other food source data to look at consumption of herring. And while that data was not inputted directly into the assessment because of the variability with the sampling in that data, the trends are apparent, and by making this change in natural mortality, the trends in the assessment became more consistent with the trends that we're seeing in other data about food habits. So the Herring PDT took a look at the assumptions and took a look at the assessment and discussed it in detail. And the PDT concluded that natural mortality and the consumption of herring by predators has been addressed in the assessment to the extent possible. The PDT felt that this was an appropriate approach given the role of herring as forage, and it's consistent with other data regarding consumption and predation. And the PDT stated that natural mortality has been evaluated in SAW 54 for herring more thoroughly than any other species in this region. Third source of uncertainty that we talked about were the changes to the MSY reference points, and this obviously the significant changes that we've seen in the biological reference points. The changes are due primarily, obviously, to the changes in the model, but primarily to the changes in the stock recruitment relationship, which are largely influenced by the 2008 year class, as well as the changes to natural mortality. That's why you're seeing such significant changes in MSY and things like that. And then the PDT just identified some other general, what we call qualitative uncertainty regarding the assessment. And these are things that, this is sort of general uncertainty, I think, that exists within all assessments. Specific to Herring are, you know, the choices of the data, the exclusion of the acoustic survey, and then certainly the stock structure and stock mixing issues that sort of remain an element of uncertainty when it comes to Herring stock assessment. So having said all of that, we approached the SSC to discuss the ABC and the ABC control rule. The ABC control rule is a term that just really means the specified approach for setting ABC. And it is a function of scientific uncertainty. It is specified and modified by the SSC. And as you recall, we had a 2010 to 2012 control rule that was based on a three-year average of catch. So we wanted to move towards potentially a different approach, or at least consider alternative approaches. And we provided the SSC with information for two approaches to consider, one being setting ABC at 75% of FMSY, and another being a constant catch approach, which would set the same catch level for all 3 years and provide for a little bit of stability for the fishery, at least in the short term. So the SSC reviewed the discussion document and discussed those two alternatives for specifying ABC, as well as other potential alternatives and other potential approaches. We heard a little bit of that earlier today. And the SSC ultimately supports both approaches as an ABC control rule or an ABC specification for 2013 to 15. The SSC stated that because of the current status of Herring, these two approaches are nearly equivalent from a biological perspective. Both approaches are expected to produce similar biomass in 2015. And you heard a little bit about some of the trade-offs with risk in the two approaches this morning. But I'll go into that a little bit more right here. This is the 75% MSY approach. This would be your overfishing levels, I'm sorry, your overfishing limits and your ABCs associated with a 75% FMSY approach. For this approach, you set your fishing mortality rate across all 3 years. And because you have a constant F across all 3 years, the buffer, if you will, for scientific uncertainty becomes distributed among all three of those years. The trade-off with this approach is that you have a higher risk in year one of overfishing than you do in years two and three. And certainly with the 2008 year class moving through the fishery, because of the higher yield that this approach allows in 2013, under this approach versus the other approach, you may see more fishing on that 2008 year class, which is one of the primary sources of uncertainty in the assessment. The constant catch approach, instead of setting F and applying F to get a catch, we set the catch, and you apply the catch to get an F. And in this approach, the catch is applied, the same catch is applied in all 3 years, and the catch is 114,000, and this is the catch that was projected to result in 2015 in a 50% chance or less of reaching FMSY. It says here that your F is 0.27, which is FMSY. The projections produce this 50% or less of the time. The trade-off here is that you may have a higher probability of overfishing in that third year versus the other approach, which has the higher probability in the first year. Your buffer for scientific uncertainty is more upfront in this approach and less in the out years. So this actually provides more of a buffer upfront to account for the uncertainty with the 2008 year class. But the buffer kind of tapers off and is not there in year three because you've accounted for it in the earlier years. I should note under both approaches, under either approach, there is a no chance that the stock will become overfished. So the trade-offs that you're looking at are risks of overfishing, and a lot of it relates to whether or not you want to accept that risk in the earlier years or in the later years and how comfortable you are with fishing on the 2008 year class. So that's scientific uncertainty, and that brings us to an ABC, or in this case, two options for an ABC. Once you have an ABC, the council then addresses management uncertainty and then specifies an overall annual catch limit, or an ACL, and the ACL is your ABC deducted for management uncertainty. In the discussion document and during the 2010 to 2012 specifications, we addressed, we identified three sources potentially for management uncertainty. The first being Canadian catch, the second being state waters catch, and this would be catch by state waters only permit holders, and then the third being herring discards. So when you're evaluating uncertainty regarding these three issues, the question that you have to ask is how uncertain or how certain are you that whatever you expect for these three issues over the next 3 years will be similar to what happened over the last 3 years? Any further accounting for uncertainty that you're doing is to account for uncertainty above and beyond what you've already observed in the fishery over the last 3 years and what you would expect in the next 3 years. So, Canadian catch. This is the this is the primary source of management uncertainty for the herring fishery. The inshore stock component that's primarily spawns in the inshore Gulf of Maine is caught in the New Brunswick weir fishery, and while catches in the New Brunswick weir fishery generally are not large, they can be variable, and we assume for the purposes of our specifications and for the purposes of the assessment that 100% of the fish that are caught in the New Brunswick weir fishery come from the inshore component of the resource. Probably some of those fish come from the Scotian shelf stock, but for our assumptions, we assume that all of them come from the inshore stock of Atlantic herring. So we have to take a management uncertainty deduction for the expectation that the Canadians are going to catch some of the inshore fish. The deduction that we take is the way that we take the deduction is to review effort and catch in the New Brunswick weir fishery, and we try to deduct for the next 3 years what our expectation of effort or catch in that fishery may be. From 2010 to 2012, in the last round of specifications, we took a deduction of 14,800 tons. That's, given recent performance in the New Brunswick weir fishery, a relatively high deduction. So we also put in a provision that said that if 9,000 tons was not caught by this fishery by October 15th, we would reallocate 3,000 back to Area 1A for November and December. And we did that because we're assuming 14,800. So we basically set up a mechanism to at least return 3,000 of that to our fishery if it's clear that the Canadian fishery is not going to catch it. As I mentioned, the fishery has been variable, to say the least, over the last few years. We've provided some information here for the committee and the council to consider about recent average catches in the fishery, 3-year, 5-year, 10-year averages. We also provided a catch distribution in case we wanted to look at 75th percentile or median catch levels over a time frame. And with this particular issue, the council is free to specify whatever it determines to be reasonable for management uncertainty due to the New Brunswick weir fishery, provided that it's justified based on what we're seeing in the fishery and what our expectations are for the next 3 years in this fishery. State waters catch, there really isn't a lot of it. and we did not take a deduction for state waters catch for 2010 to 2012. The Herring TDT does not believe that an additional deduction for the next 3 years is necessary. The only state waters only catch that is occurring is in the state of Maine, and you see the numbers here. In 2010, it was 933 tons. In 2011, it was 32 tons of fish. So these are very, very small numbers, and we don't believe that there's no reason to believe that these numbers are going to increase so in the next 3 years. So we don't believe that an additional deduction is necessary. Regarding herring discards, the herring PDT feels that uncertainty related to estimating herring discards is not likely to be a significant source of management uncertainty in the upcoming years. If anything, our ability to estimate herring discards is improving. Increased observer coverage in the fishery, enhanced observer sampling have both improved bycatch accounting and reduced uncertainty related to herring discards. And then we all know that Amendment 5 is coming down the pike. Amendment 5 will continue to improve catch monitoring and the accuracy of herring discards. So the herring PDT does not believe that there is an additional deduction that's necessary to account for herring discards in this round of specs. So that leaves us for management uncertainty, essentially looking at what to deduct for the Canadian catch. And I'll get into the committee recommendations in just a minute. Just really quickly, the other specifications, once you deduct scientific uncertainty to get your ABC and then you deduct management uncertainty to get your ACL, your ACL is what the U.S. fishery can catch. So your ACL is your optimum yield for the U.S. fishery. We then set domestic annual harvesting. Our harvesting capacity is usually set equal to our optimum yield because we've had available yield in this fishery much, much higher than current levels, so we clearly have the capacity. The domestic annual processing specification, DAP, is usually equal to the harvesting capacity minus the 4,000 tons that we specify for border transfer. These are all things that the committee will wrestle with as we get into the options for distributing the ACL among the management areas. We do have a mechanism in the plan that allows for research set-asides. We can set aside 0 to 3% of the sub-ACL in any of the management areas. We did not do that in 2010 to 2012 because of the significant reductions that were taken in the quotas. But that is something that can be reconsidered for this next round of specifications. We also have a fixed gear set aside for some of the fixed gear fisheries in Maine. The fixed gear set aside for 2010 to 2012 was 295 tons. This can be set up to 500 tons, and it is returned to the 1A fishery if it is not utilized, I believe, by November 1st. So at last week's herring committee meeting, the committee did recommend that the 2013 to 15 ABC and ABC control rule be based on the constant catch approach, which would set ABC at 114,000 metric tons for all 3 years. The committee recommends a 6,200 metric ton deduction for management uncertainty, which is based on the 3-year average of the New Brunswick weir fishery catch, which would leave us with an ACL or a total U.S. optimum yield of 107,800 metric tons. The committee then directed the PDT to develop options for distributing that ACL among the management areas. At least one option to be based on a proportional increase across all four management areas. We're essentially looking at potentially somewhere around 15 to 20,000 tons of additional yield to reallocate to the fishery. So one option would be based on allocating that proportionately across all four management areas, and at least one other option would be based on allocating it in the areas that need it, which are the areas that have either reached or exceeded their sub-ACLs in recent years. The committee also asked the PDT to look at the potential to move some of the yield or some of the available quota from Area 3 in the offshore area to Area 2 to address the needs of the mackerel fishery in the wintertime. So these are things that the PDT is going to now work on as we move through the specifications process in order to develop options to consider for how to distribute the ACL among the management areas. As Doug mentioned, and I was just going to go over it here briefly, the committee does recommend that the specifications package be a standalone action as a top priority to be completed as soon as possible. This would include the ABC and accountability measure alternatives to address the court order, but would not include the river herring catch caps. You'll see in the discussion during priorities tomorrow that originally we were proposing that the specifications package include river herring catch caps as well, because when we got the court order and we saw that we would be reconsidering accountability measures and ABC control rules, we sort of envisioned a much more drawn-out, comprehensive specs package and thought there would be an opportunity during this process to also address the river herring catch caps. Now, having worked through it and talked with the service more, it sounds like we can move forward with the specs process a lot more expeditiously and still address the ABC and AM issues that are in the court order. The committee would like to see that happen without further delaying the specs process by dealing with river herring catch caps in the same process. So when we get to the priorities discussion tomorrow, you'll see the committee is recommending just to move the catch caps out of the specs package and put it as a separate action for the council to consider in priorities, which will give us four herring priorities to consider for next year. The committee did go ahead and talk a little bit about the accountability measures and potential alternatives to consider in the specs process to address the court order. And there was one motion that you'll have before you for some alternatives for accountability measures to be considered. And at this point, since this is the initial specifications meeting, the more of these kinds of alternatives and things that we can put on the table now, the more fleshed out I can make the specs package for the next meeting, and we can try to move this along as quickly as possible. As Carrie mentioned, to meet the timeline for the court order, we need to have final decisions made no later than January. The timeline, ideally, would be to have final decisions made at the November council meeting, which unfortunately is only like 5 weeks from now. So it's a lot to do in a short time frame, I'm not sure, but we are going to move forward. We have a committee meeting and an advisors meeting and a PDT meeting in October. With the intent of trying to get things ready for the November council meeting, acknowledging that it will most likely be January. But the more we can do up front with options for accountability measures and anything like that, the more fleshed out the document will be for the next meeting and the more expeditiously we'll be able to get it done. And that's it.
Doug, do you have motions to this presentation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have three motions from the committee. Would you like me to burn them up right now? Or?
I'm going to say yes, and then they may allow for some of the questions to come forward.
Okay. The first motion here is moved on behalf of the committee, again, is to recommend the adopting an ABC control rule as the preferred alternative for the 2013-15 based on the constant catch approach outlined in the Herring PDT and supported by the SSC.
That is a committee motion. It doesn't need a second. I'm going to go to the audience for any comments on this motion. Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just come to the microphone to support the motion, that's all. I'm strongly in support of it, and I don't want to take up any more of your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Back to the council. Dr. Pierce.
I supported this motion at the committee level, and I still support it, largely because of the fact that with this particular approach, we do provide a larger degree of protection or awareness of the fact that the 2008 year class does have some uncertainty to it regarding the size of that particular year class. So this particular strategy would have would entail less pressure during 2013 on that particular year class. It provides us an opportunity to better assess the strength of that year class in 2014 and perhaps even make some adjustments if need be if we determine that that year class is not as strong as we think it is. I'm also comforted by the fact that, as indicated by Lori, the size of that year class was scaled down as part of a sensitivity analysis, and when it was reduced to a lower level, there was no impact on stock status. So that gives me a level of comfort, but at the same time, I still would rather proceed with some caution regarding the size of that year class, and that would mean the constant catch approach provides a degree of buffering for the scientific uncertainty of that particular year class.
Further comment? Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I share, I think, a lot of the opinions that Dr. Pierce stated. I'm comfortable with this as where we should end up, and certainly prefer it to the other alternative that's in front of us. But I have real reservations about our performance on setting three-year specifications for just about everything, particularly with a strong year class in front of us. The out years just never pan out. And, you know, with the caveats that Dr. Pierce laid out, that we'll be able to see over time where this 08 year class winds up and maybe make some adjustments, I guess I can support this. I prefer that we did 1 or 2 year specifications for this stock and more frequent stock assessments for all of the stocks that we manage. The last thing that I will say, and following up with Dr. Pierce said about the sensitivity runs, wherein we reduced the 2008 year class, I think, in half. I don't think that changed the existing stock status, but it certainly increases our likelihood that we're overfishing significantly in the out year. So we need to be mindful of the risks. With all that said, I can support this approach as the better of the two that are in front of us.
Dave Gaethel.
I support the constant catch strategy. I think this is a logical way forward. This 2008 year class is going to dominate the fishery for this entire three-year period, no matter what size it actually turns out to be. And the rationale that I would use for supporting the constant catch is that if you look at the two approaches, in the first year, you leave an extra 16,000 tons of what are going to be primarily 2008 fish in the fishery for one more year, allowing them to spawn at least one more time. 16,000 tons is not an insubstantial sum of fish. That's a lot of herring. So, and that, to me, that mitigates any risks in the outlying years, assuming they have any kind of spawning success at all. So this seems to be a very logical approach and a way to move forward.
Anyone else? I call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention? 1. 16-01. The motion carries. Doug.
Next motion. Okay, this motion again is on behalf of the committee. To deduct as part of management uncertainty a revised value of 6,200 metric tons for Canadian catch in the New Brunswick weir fishery based on a three-year average catch from 2009 to 2011, rounded to the nearest 100 metric tons, as the preferred alternative.
And a committee motion. I'm going to go to the public for comment on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Owen Rochford, NORPA. I'm really concerned why you have to make a deduction for the Canadian fishery, because my understanding is when they did the survey to get the data points, I felt that the survey took place in American waters. So to assume that the fish comes out of the inshore stock, that's an awful big assumption. And I think it's totally wrong without any scientific data to back it up. I mean, people come up here, it's America, freedom of speech, you can say whatever you want at the mic. But what I find wrong with counsel is, without documented evidence, like government documented evidence, for example, observer data, Coast Guard documented fact, environment police documentation, they should take it as rhetoric and anecdotal information and not be ruling on it as such. I mean, it was offered up that they feel, my God, I feel that we're getting hosed, but that doesn't matter. The fact that they feel it comes from the inshore stock, there's no scientific data to back it up. I mean, you know, it could come from anywhere. So making a deduction, on any deduction at all from Canadian stock when the survey never took place in Canadian waters, I think is capricious and arbitrary, to say the least. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Patrick.
Thanks, Rip. Patrick Paquette, recreational fishing advocate from Massachusetts. I just wanted to point out that all we've talked about, or all that's just been talked about, especially leading up to the prior motion, was that the largest year class in history is coming through the fishery. And so we're going to assume the Canadian catch is going down. It just doesn't make sense. That's all. Thank you.
Lori.
I do just want to clarify that the Canadian catch is from a weir fishery, and the weir fishery targets younger fish, mostly age 1 and 2 and a little bit age 3. So actually the weir fishery, I believe, would have caught the 2008 year class in 2010, and you can see that reflected in the catch as well.
I saw a hand back there.
Button. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sean Mahoney with the Conservation Law Foundation. We're concerned with using this three-year average catch of 2009-2011. I mean, if you just go to the prior 3 years, your average catch would be about 18,000 metric tons. So there's clearly a lot of a range here, and it's actually even noted in the documents for you how the fluctuations in the weir fishery are substantial, and obviously the numbers show that. I think even on top of that, reliance on just the New Brunswick weir numbers to account for management uncertainty is problematic, particularly since, you know, there is a history of overages in the sub-ACLs, especially in 1A and 1B. So we're quite concerned that the only management uncertainty that we're doing here is with the New Brunswick weir fishery, and we're choosing the lowest numbers we can. Just because those are the most recent, it doesn't go apples to apples. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am supporting this motion, and I think if you go back and you look at how much fish we left in the water by estimating the 14.5 or 14.8 or whatever it was, we left like 20,000 metric tons in the water during the last 3 year specs because of the Canadian weir fishery was so high. I mean, we got a 95% closure in 1A. We've never exceeded the ACL for the entire stock complex. So I'm speaking in strong support of this motion also. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Tom Dempsey, then Mary Beth.
Thank you. Listening to the comments, I guess I did have the question. If we look at the weir catch over the last 3 years, it looks like, I don't know, it's like half of what the 10-year average, which was somewhat reduced from the 20-year average, especially over these last few years. If they were expected to see the 2008 year class, why isn't that represented in their catch of late? Why isn't this showing up in the weir catch? And why wouldn't we expect it to sort of have a similar signal as that because that class dominates the fishery.
I mean, I see it in 2010. They caught almost 11,000 tons, which was up from 4,000 and 6,000 in the 2 years before. So, I mean, I guess it's all about how you look at the data. The 2007, the high number is certainly an anomaly. That's the highest it's been since, you know, the early 1990s. But I don't know. I guess I see something a little bit different. I saw that 2010 number and said, oh, there's that 2008 year class.
Just a quick follow-up, if I may. What, and knowing nothing about that fishery, admittedly. No, that's fine. Knowing nothing about that fishery, what accounts for the 20-year decline in their catch? I mean, it seems substantial. What, is there an accepted or understood reason why that's dropped so quickly?
Well, if you look at the time series, catch has been variable in this fishery over the entire time series. I mean, it's you know, ranged from, you know, less than 10,000 up to over 30,000. So I don't know. We provided in the document on page 26 the number of weirs in the fishery, and you can see that just overall effort in the fishery has declined significantly since the 1980s. So, you know, I think part of it is probably just a general reduction in the fishery as a whole, but the variability and obviously the environmental factors as to whether herring or not herring move inshore further far enough for the weirs to catch them is part of what contributes to the variability. I'm sure that there are folks around the table or in the industry who can provide some better perspective on that.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. And I was going to do, as Lori suggested, refer people to page 26 in the spec package document. In 2011, there were 37 active weirs. At the beginning of the time series in 1978, there were 208. So there's been a very significant reduction in effort in that fishery. And, you know, we've spoken with people this year. There's very little gear in the water this year. We're going to likely see a well, I don't know for the whole season if we'll see a lower number, but most of that gear is out of the water already. So, as also was pointed out, I mean, I support this approach because in this year we're, you know, we're losing 10,000 ton to the New Brunswick weir fishery that won't be caught. Last year it was like 8,000 ton. So that's a lot of fish. And I did just have one quick question for Lori. When we first developed the herring FMP, we deducted Canadian catch from the beginning. However, we deducted it off the total. We would deduct it from ABC or probably OY at the time. And we didn't take it out of a specific area. Do you recall when we started doing that?
Gosh, I hardly recall the old process prior to the ACL process, but we used to take a 20,000 ton deduction. It was from, I believe we took it from OY prior to distributing the TACs in the management areas. So it's, I think the approach that we use now is similar in that respect, but when we implemented Amendment 1, we gave ourselves the flexibility to change that assumption because we recognized that 20,000, because of the variability in the fishery, was certainly too high in many years. And then we've moved into this ACL framework. But I believe that we did take that deduction right up front before, and we assumed it was all inshore fish, 20,000 tons, before dividing up the catch into the management areas.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaetel.
Lori, two questions. One is, there's no give-back provision in this motion. If it's less than 6,200, it's just 6,200. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The second question I had is, what happens if it's over 6,200? What happens? Is that, and it drives the entire fishery into an overage, is that deducted the following year? Or how is that going to work?
No. I mean, really, at for that year, nothing happens because we, you know, can't control the Canadian catch, and we don't have an overage payback for our fishermen for what the Canadians catch. But what we would do is, that's why these specs are only set for 3 years, is so that we can reevaluate that assumption for the next round of specs and adjust it accordingly. These are all deductions from an ACL, which is reduced from an ABC, which is reduced from an OFL. So the overall goal is to prevent overfishing on the stock complex and not exceed your OFL. We're now, you know, several layers below that. So hopefully the Canadian catch wouldn't blow the OFL out of the water. Either way, we have no control over it. So all we can do is make an assumption about what we think they're going to catch in order to better ensure that our fishery is going to stay under its catch limits. And then if that assumption is false, or if the Canadians catch more fish, then we need to readjust in the next round of specifications.
Okay, I guess my question to the council in general is, it would seem to me to be more logical to set this number higher with some kind of give-back provision like we had, and if they don't reach it, then give it back. I think 6,200 is too low myself. I think they're going to catch more than that. I'm still concerned what's going to happen if it goes over.
Terry Stockwell, then Paul Howard.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Beth started talking about the variability of the fishery. If you look on page 25 of the document, you'll see that last year the New Brunswick fishery was 3711. This year, the combined U.S. and Canadian fishery is extremely low. I think, was it around 200 in Canada? For whatever the reason is, and I might be alarmed by that if it wasn't for the same fishery doing very well just outside of there. But, this measure provides, it will actually front loads the fish into Area 1A for the entire season. It doesn't drip, put it in at the end. It will distribute the catch. I'm not concerned about the potential for overages. We have Amendment 5. It's got a vastly improved monitoring program, and we have the industry stepped ahead with daily reporting. I think it makes a lot of sense. I support this.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Do we have a provision that when 95% of the catch is caught, the directed fishery closes down or something? Has NEMS ever tried to, or what is the process for the Canadians to post their landings, or have we ever tried to get landing information from them on better than an annual basis of their herring weir catch?
Rory.
We monitor, NIMS monitors the weir catch now because we have a provision that says if they don't catch 9,000 by October 15th, 3,000 gets returned to our fisheries. So I believe they get the catch estimates monthly at least.
Mary Beth, did you have another question? Or are you? Anyone else on this? Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm comfortable with this motion, and I'm comfortable with the 6,200 metric ton for the Canadian catches. Mark Gibson pointed out at the committee meeting that's just a drop in the bucket compared to the overall biomass in the stock. Thank you.
Anything further? I'll call the question. All those in favor so indicate. Sixteen in favor, opposed, abstention, 1. 16-01, motion carries. Doug. Motion number 3. And this one relates to our accountability measures that we're suggesting to consider alternatives for adjusting accountability measures that include closing the herring fishery A, when 95% of a management area sub-ACL is projected to be taken, and B, when 100% of a management area sub-ACL is projected to be taken. Committee motion, no second is necessary. I'm going to go to the audience for comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Roger Fleming, Earth Justice, as noted before, we represented the plaintiffs in the Amendment 4 suit. And reflecting back in your discussion about a reasonable range of alternatives, this does not seem like a reasonable range of alternatives from our perspective. I mean, basically, I believe that you have status quo and to actually allow more fish to be caught before this closure takes place. A reasonable range of alternatives in this case would be broader and would probably include closing the fishery when fewer fish are taken. As we know, there have been a number of overages in the management areas, and so it would be reasonable to consider one or two alternatives that went in the other direction. Thank you.
Laurie.
Clarification on these accountability measure alternatives. These relate to the existing accountability. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. These actually would propose, these would be new accountability measures or possibly modifications. But where it says here, closing the herring fishery, this doesn't refer to closing the directed herring fishery and reducing everybody to 2,000 pounds. The current accountability measure does that when 95% is projected to be taken. These two alternatives would be zero possession at 95%, and then the second alternative would be 100%. So just to clarify, this isn't a matter of closing the directed herring fishery. This is about prohibiting the possession of herring by all vessels.
Anyone else? Jeff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin, we do support this motion, too. I just wanted to say that, you know, we've gone to daily reporting in this fishery, and as dealers, we'd go to daily dealer reporting, too. I think one of the biggest discrepancies is some of the dealer reports are late. Maybe we need to go to daily dealer reporting. We've gone to daily catch reporting. So I think as a fishery, we've done everything we can do. And I think the zero possession approach is a little more conservative and probably appropriate. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. David Pierce.
Yeah, in light of what Laurie said, a clarification I think is needed. Does this mean, Laurie, that either or both of these particular alternatives would mean that the whiting fishery that might catch a relatively small amount of sea herring as a bycatch would be shut down if the directed fishery for herring took or was projected to take 95% or 100%. We need to know what the implications of this would be. I think it means we would lose the whiting fishery and other fisheries that might take sea herring as a bycatch would mean just about every dragger fishery that's occurring in the area that would take sea herring as a bycatch. And I can say that with some knowledge, since in Massachusetts we have a provision for 2,000 pounds as an allowable catch when a closure occurs, because we recognize that there is a whiting fishery. And there are other fisheries, ground fisheries, that will take whiting because they are there. So this has consequences that we all need to understand if we indeed adopt this.
What this would mean is that when under option A, for example, when 95% or under option B, when 100% is projected to be taken, possession would be prohibited. The whiting fishery could operate and discard herring. Right now, when 95% is projected to be taken, vessels in the whiting fishery are limited to 2,000 pounds. So under this option, the vessels would not be allowed to keep those 2,000 pounds when they fish for whiting. They would have to discard them. And I was going to say something else, and I forgot.
Dave Gatham.
Yeah, I don't really see how this motion jives with the idea of minimizing discards to the extent practicable. The whiting fishery, the shrimp fishery, the groundfish fishery, just about every fishery in the North Atlantic catches herring. Not very many, large quantities. That's why the 2,000 pounds exists. But it catches herring. So we're going to go to a dedicated discard fishery once 95% is reached, or once 100% is reached. And to me, I can't see that. That doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I don't think the 2,000-pound bycatch has ever driven this fishery over in terms of numbers. You know, what's driven this fishery over in the past is late reporting by the directed fishery. And, I think probably the whiting fishery, the shrimp fishery, and the groundfish fishery probably operate all year long on 5% of the total herring fishery from 1A, probably less than that. I think we have figures on it. But, I can't support this motion the way it's currently written.
Terry Stockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The important point to notice in this motion is it doesn't say preferred alternative. The committee was asked, requested to provide additional AM measures to address the court order. This is one. You know, we often put two, three, four in. This is one extreme. We have a 95% measure that's currently in place, and I believe after we vote this motion either up or down, we'll have another one to consider. Dave Preble.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Terry for that, for what he just said. I've been sitting here confused by this motion, what it's intended to do, and that makes sense. So with that in mind, I will support it. Normally, I would not. I agree with Dave Gaithel. I normally would never support this kind of motion.
Doug Grout. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As chair of the committee, I didn't vote on this, but I had some concerns about this, particularly the 100% measure. I also had some concerns that we're turning landings into discards, and so it's not going to do anything to really prevent exceeding the quota, because we take into consideration in a sub-ACL both landings and discards. So it's still going to be in there. I think we should vote on this one way or the other. I hope other people will see the weaknesses in this, but if we decide to keep it in, it is, Terry said, it is an option. And I do, after we dispense with this motion, have another motion that I am going to make, not on behalf of the committee, that may provide a wider range of alternatives to consider. Further discussion? Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just don't understand how this is going to reduce the overages that this fishery consistently seems to take. Having 100% shutdown level seems to be going in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor, so indicate. Can you hold them up again, please? One. Eight in favor. Opposed? Nine opposed. Abstention? Okay. Eight in favor, nine opposed. Motion does not carry. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the weekend, I started thinking about, some potential wider range of alternatives here. The thing that I started thinking about is whether we should try and have different or modifications to our current accountability measures based on the status of the stock. And so with that in mind, I came up with this particular motion. If you can bring that up, Karen, to consider including in the following alternatives for adjusting the accountability measures in the specifications package. Number one, the proactive accountability measure to close the directed fishery in a given management area when landings are projected to reach 95% of a sub-ACL will be adjusted to 92% under the following conditions. A, the stock is overfished or overfishing is occurring, and the sub-ACL
for the management area has been exceeded in either of the preceding 2 years. Number two, if overfishing is not occurring and the stock is rebuilt, i.e., the SSB exceeds the target, the consequential AM of a pound-for-pound payback for exceeding a given sub-ACL will not be invoked until the sub-ACL is exceeded by 5% or more. And if I can get a second to that, I'd like to give my rationalization for it.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell.
As I was looking at this, thinking about this, I felt that when we're in a situation where we are overfished or overfishing, we need to be more conservative than what we currently have. And so that's what I'm providing as an alternative to reduce, to close at an earlier level. But also, if there is a problem, if we are in the previous 2 years exceeding the sub-ACL, if we haven't been in the previous 2 years, I don't think we need to do to reduce it. And the reason for that is that I firmly believe that with Amendment 5 and the daily reporting that was implemented last year, the probability, I realize we've had some overages in the previous 2 years, but I think that problem is going to go away because we're going to have much better reporting at that point. But if it doesn't, then we do have, and we do have an overfished or overfishing situation, and we have had an overage, then we need to be more conservative. We clearly have to be accountable for going over. And then as far as the other half of the motion, this came, I was struck by this because I felt when we have a stock in such good shape as we have right now, where we're well above the rebuilding target, that we really shouldn't be spending a lot of time and effort worrying about payback of a small overages, because it's really not impacting the biology of the stock, the status of the stock, when we're at double the SSB level. Now, what this leaves is these are only going to be triggered by certain status of the stocks. If it's anything in between, for example, if we are below the target and but we're not overfished, we're still going to be at the same accountability measures that we currently have in place. So I think this motion tries to get at a wider range of accountability measures that is being asked for here. And I'd like to have this included for analysis in the specifications.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience for comment on this motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason we're getting overages is when we call in to see what we got on board every morning, that goes right directly to National Marine Fisheries. But then when we come to the beach, we sell our fish, they have to get a report back from the dealers to confirm the poundage that we're after landing. I think the part where the dealer has to come back to National Marine Fisheries should be taken away so that you can act on the day. In other words, if we're up to 95% or getting to 95% of the quota and all the boats catch together, they call in. You got that daily report is going to enact the close down of the fishery, like. Whereas if you have to wait 3 more days, we're going to get up back out and we're going to get another trip, and then we're over the quota. So it needs to be faster from the boat to National Marine Fisheries to close the fishery.
I'm having trouble understanding. Are you supporting what this motion says or not?
I'm kind of speaking to the reason that we're going over the quota in all the different areas is because it's not happening fast enough. We're doing our part. But when it goes to National Marine Fisheries, it seems to fall between the cracks. And that's, it's the Carlin is the one that should close the fishery, because if you don't, otherwise you're going to wait 3 more days before you close it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Mary Beth.
I support the motion. I do have just a question. It's come up a couple times. If we were to require daily reporting for dealers, what kind of action would we need for that? If the agency was able to implement daily reporting for vessels because it improved catch monitoring and we didn't need to take action, I'm just curious if we ever considered that for dealers.
Yeah, I think we'd have to look at it. It's possible we could do it through our own regulatory amendment, but we're not sure right now.
Anyone else? Dave Gason.
Yeah, I support the motion. I think Doug's laid out the rationale quite clearly and very well. But I do have a question for the service based on what Mr. Mullins said. Are we closing the fishery now on based on the dealer report or the catch report forms we're filing on the VMS?
You want to respond to that?
So currently we have 3 data streams. We have daily VMS, weekly VTR, and weekly dealer data. So projections are made as data come in, whatever data we have at the time, and projections are made off that information, and then we predict closures accordingly.
Okay, because if in fact we could close off the catch reports that we're filing, since the A, B, and C boats have to file them, that's virtually all the fish. That would seem to guarantee that we shouldn't get into this situation. I mean, this fishery is a volume fishery, so 2 or 3 days can produce a lot of fish in a short period of time. So that would just be a suggestion. I think Mr. Mullins has a reasonable way forward here to make sure we don't get into overage situations.
One additional thing, when we know that we're getting close, we often will consult with our port agents, too, to see who's out. We may even call some of the processors to get a sense for what they have out and whether they're finding fish and so on. We try to make that final call.
That's good. I mean, I think it should be recognized by the council that at the time of Amendment 4, we did not have daily catch reporting. And we did not have the VMS catch report. We were working off the VTRs and the dealer reports, which had to be, at least the VTRs were almost always a week old minimum. It's the situation has already changed radically from Amendment 4.
Anyone against? Mark.
I just have a little comment about number 2. It seems to there be a little legal problem with that, maybe, because AMs have to be triggered when the ACL is exceeded. But you're saying that that won't happen until the ACL is exceeded by 105%. I think that needs to be reworded slightly so that the AM is triggered when you exceed 100%, but there is no pound-for-pound payback in the AM until you get to 105.
That sounds reasonable to me if it makes it clear to the... That was what my intent is, yes.
I'm not too sure that I mean, I could read it either way, but I agree with the way that you have put it up there.
could be interpreted with just what you're saying, that there's no...
What I know this is trying to say, because I'm the one that made the motion, is that the pound for pound payback will not occur until we get at least to 105%. At that point, there'll be a full pound for pound payback. Anything over 100% of the ACL. It's just we won't be worrying about the small stuff here.
Anyone else against? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor? Sixteen in favor. Opposed? Abstention? 16-0-0. Doug.
I think that's pretty much it, other than to refer the committee to our draft herring oversight committee meeting minutes that suggested a couple of methods for for developing the sub-ACLs. And Lori already outlined them. They are to increase in all areas the proportion. Any additional quota that we have this year will be increased in all areas proportionally, or needs-based increase in the proportional division between 1A, 1B, and 2, and then also a potential to move quota from Area 3 to Area 2. Just ask the committee if there's any other suggestions of ways that we would consider developing the sub-ACLs for each management area. And if not, that's the end of my report.
Any other questions for Doug? Okay. We will take a 10-minute break, return at 3:15, and we are going to push through the remainder of the agenda items. Thank you.